The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live.
Welcome on in. We are live today at Greyhawk, Greyhawk Golf Club, which is the home of the Division I Golf Championships. Very much excited for this event coming up next month. Of course, we have the NFL Draft. We have what happened with the Suns last night. But I said, you know what? We're going to get to the draft. We're going to do that. Ed Werder from ESPN, their longtime national reporter, he will be with me coming up at about 10:20. We will talk with Ed. And then coming up at about 10:40, we'll have Eric Metz. Eric Metz, longtime NFL agent. And I want the curtain pulled back on NFL draft stories with Eric Metz. That will come up at about 10:40. But we're going to start out right off the top with Joe Shershinovich with the Greyhawk Golf Club, the director of golf. Slide out in here a little bit more because I want people
Morning, Brad.
See you. Good seeing you. How are you?
Good to see you. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having us out. This event, to me, okay, the draft's tonight. Got it. This is the story of the day in Valley Sports right here, right now, with this coming up next month. You've got your media day coming up today. Let's just talk about how you landed this event and how big this is going to be next month.
First of all, thanks for being here. It's exciting. The Golf Channel and the NCAA approached us about 4 years ago to see if we would be interested. Historically, this event has been at a club on an annual basis. The discussion for the, let me back up a little bit. About seven, eight, 9 years ago, they started a format at the same facility where the women would go the first week and the men would go the second week. So on a facility level, it's a big 2 weeks. But for the Golf Channel, for them to set up one time, and it's a dream come true for the college golf to be on live TV.
Yep.
They change the format from the traditional championship. They go 4 days of stroke play. They go into match play. And match play over the last seven, eight, 9 years has been spectacular on the women's and the men's front. So for a one-off event, in other words, to go to a facility for 1 year, the Golf Channel and NCAA said, would you be interested in hosting it for 3 years? We want to try this model. We said, of course. Late May is a great time of year in the Valley of the Sun. Daylight, course conditions, weather. So we put in our bid package and we got it. We're really excited that we got it.
Okay, when the phone call came, were you like, really? Were you just doing backflips inside? Like, wow, because I've been here at Greyhawk through the years, okay? And this is one of those destination courses, but to host an event like this on this level, this is new.
Yeah, in fact, I was playing golf when I got it.
So you do remember.
We did. I'll tell you exactly. I did find out, and I was on the golf course, and the phone rang, and absolutely, it was almost a, I can't believe we got it. Like, it sunk in after a few days, and well, then the planning starts, right? I mean, this ownership here at Greyhawk, and I've lived here since the mid-'80s, and I tell people that this golf community in Scottsdale, Phoenix, and really the whole state. This is a part of a lifestyle here. People love it here. You couldn't ask for a better national championship to come. And by the way, they've had a men's championship here. I believe they've had a ladies.
Okay,
but to have over the last 30 years, but to have it on this scale in today's environment where you're going to have the premier, and most of these rosters on the ladies and the men are worldwide student athletes. I mean, they're from all over the world.
Yep.
And to have them showcased here in Arizona, here at Scottsdale, here in Greyhawk now in 3 weeks on a Raptor course that most of the, and this is the first public facility in a long time. It's been at private facilities for many years. And so a lot of people have been able to play. The pandemic obviously canceled it last year, which only revved up the excitement for this year. So this local community right now, you know, obviously the Phoenix Open is a huge success, the LPGA, the Charles Schwab Senior event. To have a national championship at the level of a Final Four, at the level of a BCS championship, to be partnering with Arizona State, to have the Thunderbirds, to have the city of Scottsdale and Greyhawk, it's an awesome partnership. So we're excited.
Will fans be allowed to come? Do you know yet?
It looks like the fans will be allowed to come. That's what we're planning on at this point.
Full, or let's just wait and see?
Let's just wait and see.
Okay, I got you on that.
So we'd love to have the fans. We'd love to have the energy out there.
If you're giving just a thumbnail of what you expect the field to look like, and there's going to be names that nobody knows, that's part of the beauty of, I think, on the collegiate golf side. You've got to really follow it closely, but people are going to want to come out and see the next. Got a couple names?
Well, you look at
or teams, or schools.
Well, it's funny you ask. The Pac-12 just got done yesterday.
Yep.
Arizona, to their credit, congratulations to Arizona. They beat our Sun Devils by four. I saw a post last night of the 1996 Pac-12s where Tiger Woods played at Big Canyon and shot 18 under. And you looked at the names, Paul Casey and all these other people that were under there, right, that people probably knew, Pat Perez, people knew a little bit back then. It's now 25 years later, and they've made the tour, and they're well into their 40s, and they have a great career. Obviously, Tiger, arguably the greatest name in golf. Those individuals will be here this week, and it's exciting. We expect to have some Arizona natives. You know, Michael Feagles is at Illinois. One of the exciting things is there's a lot of fifth-year seniors because of the event getting canceled and all spring sports canceled. Kevin Chu at Arizona State stuck around for an extra year. Yeah. Olivia Mahaffey stuck around an extra year. So what's exciting is the talent level, the seniority, and the expertise of playing in these events will be here. What I'm mostly excited is for Arizona State. I mean, Missy and Matt have done a great job. Missy's roster is as good as any in the country. Matt's roster is as good as any in the country. So, and Arizona just winning the Pac-12 and the women's team being the national champions 3 years ago. I love the fact that Arizona and Arizona State are hot. I hope they get through the regionals. I hope they're here. That will bring so much energy to the market as well. So they're prime, and we sure expect to see them here in a few weeks.
Before I get you out of here, so fans will be allowed, tickets, things like that, the spots and dots of it. Do you know? Can you point people to
direction? I would just go to the website, greyhawkgolf.com for right now, or Arizona State, and I would say in the next week to 10 days or 2 weeks, we'll have all those details out.
Okay. Thanks for having me out.
It's great to have you.
We've got a media day going on here in a bit. Shu, thanks for coming by.
You bet, Brad.
Take care. And again, the information, just go to Greyhawks website. You know, and you can also go to NCAA.com, and they will probably have some information about it as well on the women's homepage, the men's homepage. And they will have a lot out here. And this, look, we do a lot around golf. We do a lot around golf. I love the junior golf, the collegiate golf coming here to me. Huge story. So let's make a big deal out of it and have some fun. On the other side, Ed Werder, ESPN, NFL Draft. It is draft day. We switch gears and go into the draft. The very latest, Ed Werder joins us live for a couple of minutes. Their ace reporter, that's next. All right, welcome back to Greyhawk. We're going to switch gears to the NFL draft. Ed Werder joins us live, the ace reporter with ESPN. He is going to be someone that you will see many, many times today and tonight. He's already been on early this morning. We were talking off air. Ed, good to have you on. Just how is your day going to lay out for your draft coverage tonight? Where will you be focusing?
Yeah, I started at 5:50 this morning with a 6:02 local time live shot. I've done a couple since then and have a couple more before the draft even starts. My assignment, I'm at my home in Dallas using my home TV studio. Even though the Cowboys are having an in-person media draft event and availability, our management's decided that we should remain at home for and follow, you know, safety protocols related to COVID. They like the idea of us being able to report from our home studios and get on TV quickly. So I'm covering the Cowboys, the Broncos, both of whom have top 10 picks. Yep. I'm also covering the Houston Texans and Nick Caserio's first draft, even though they're the only team in the NFL without a pick in the first 60. And I'm covering the Seattle Seahawks, who have the fewest draft picks in the NFL with just three. And then last but not least, of course, I'm covering the Arizona Cardinals. Yet again, and hoping that they'll do something interesting with the 16th pick.
So you've already been busy. You had Teddy Bridgewater yesterday. I mean,
right.
The Cowboys, there's always something. Just talk about the last 24 hours and what you've had to cover and what you're expecting tonight to cover.
Well, I think in terms of the teams that I'm covering, the most interesting thing is, like you said, the Broncos with the 9th overall pick acquiring Teddy Bridgewater. Someone who is known to their new general manager, George Payton, and to their offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, both of whom were with him in Minnesota after he was a number one pick in 2014. So he comes in, he joins Drew Locke, and now the question is, well, does this take the Broncos out of the market for a top five quarterback in this draft if one's there with the ninth pick, or would they still be willing to move up? And I've been told that it doesn't do anything to eliminate the possibility the Broncos would trade up if Justin Fields or Trey Lance were to be in that range. But it lessens the pressure on Peyton to feel like he has to go up and get a quarterback. And it creates a better environment should they draft a quarterback, whether that's, you know, tonight or it's tomorrow and on day two in the second or third round. You know, creates an environment where that player would not be under an enormous amount of pressure to play as a rookie. And that would be especially important if, you know, Trey Lance winds up being the pick, because I think he's thrown like 138 collegiate passes, which is the fewest of any first-round pick in 40 years. And then the other big story that I'm covering is obviously what are the Cowboys going to do at 10? You know, they're coming off a season in which they allowed a franchise record 473 points and 34 touchdown passes, the most in the history of the organization. They fired their defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, hired Dan Quinn, and I believe that they would like the board to fall in such a way that they got to make their choice of either Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn, two cornerbacks who are high on their draft board and whose fathers played the position or played in the NFL.
So other than that, you're not busy. And then
other than that, I got nothing to do but talk to you.
You got nothing going on. and everything we're talking about now in 10 minutes could change. So in terms of here with the Cardinals at number 16, what do you see? What are you hearing today with the Cardinals? We've been hearing out here that Steve Keim is anxious to move up. That's always draft day stuff if you're in the middle part of the first round of could they move up or not. What are you hearing around the Cardinals?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the positions I think people believe that the Cardinals would be interested in is like the Cowboys and potentially the Broncos, you know, a cornerback. Given that they lost Patrick Peterson and Drake Kirkpatrick this offseason, even though obviously they ran free agency and late in the process and signed Malcolm Butler, I think the perception is that that's still a position that Arizona and Steve Keim could address with their first pick. And I don't think they can get Surtain or Horn with that spot, but they might be able to get Caleb Farley, the Virginia Tech cornerback who's had some injury history and opted out, didn't play last year. And a lot of people think that he might prove to be the best of those three corners, but obviously you're inheriting a certain amount of risk because he didn't play, and so you don't have tape from last year. He's only played on defense on the defensive side of the ball for one season, so there's real limited amount, you know, sample size to make that judgment on him. But people think he's a really natural, explosive athlete. They like the way he competes and think he's going to be a very good NFL player. And so maybe a player who would ordinarily be a top 10 pick is available at 16 if Steve Keim judges him that way. And I think the other thing we keep hearing is, you know, rumors that the Cardinals are interested in trading up for a wide receiver, which I think Steve Keim in his media press conference said, you know, he thinks five or six receivers are going to go in the first round. That seems like an odd allocation of resources considering they've used second round picks to acquire receivers the last 2 years. They signed, you know, A.J. Green in the offseason as a free agent. They have DeAndre Hopkins. But, you know, Cliff Kingsbury plays four wide receiver sets far more than any other team in football. And so from that standpoint, if they think one of these guys is elite and within their range, then maybe that makes some sense as well.
Yeah, I mean, the wide receiver part, you know, Fitz is still out there. And is that compensatory pick reason why nothing has come out about Larry? Is him going to Tampa a reality because the money they gave Antonio Brown was not a whole lot in the grand scheme of things? I think that is still buzzing around out here. What's Larry's future? And they've taken wide receiver after wide receiver. They took Andy Isabella and didn't take DK Metcalf. And the fans have not forgiven Steve Keim for that one. wide receiver, like you said, though, Ed, it just seems like a strange allocation of resources when they've drafted Christian Kirk high. They drafted Andy Isabella high. You know, that just doesn't feel like the direction to go. And at running back, they brought in James Conner. So, you know, there's just a lot there. Before I get you out of here, because I know you got a lot happening, Kyle Pitts, is he still the wild card today on a national space that you're hearing about, the Atlanta Falcons at 4? Is that where this draft will really take a turn in a different direction?
Yeah, I think everything we're hearing right now is that, you know, Kyle Pitts is viewed as a generational talent at the tight end position. Mm-hmm. I know in talking to, you know, do my pre-draft prep, the Cowboys talk about him in the context of, you know, creating unique matchups, much like Travis Kelce does with the Chiefs, like George Kittle has for the 49ers, like Rob Gronkowski did when the Patriots were winning Super Bowls. And so he's a highly coveted, unique player. You know, he caught 100 balls and 91% of them generated either a first down or a touchdown. And so I think he is going to go to Atlanta. I think Atlanta is going to bank on, you know, Matt Ryan playing. I mean, he's 36, I think. They just restructured his contract, so it's going to be really detrimental to them if they trade or cut him over the next 3 years. And so I think they might pass on the quarterbacks and go for this guy. And he's a guy that when I started hearing about the Cardinals being interested in trading up, that maybe they would pursue him because they haven't had a tight end with over 500 yards in a season since Freddie Jones in 2003.
But I
don't see that as being a practical move, given how the Falcons apparently covet him at the number four spot.
Yeah, he went to the Wayback Machine there with Freddie Jones. I like it.
Every once in a while, I'll bring you a little something.
Yeah, I can go back to
Dan Arnold last year, but you know.
Well, for a team that has not made the playoffs in 5 years, that's the longest running drought. We would like to see something move the franchise forward in a very, very tough division. So.
Yeah, look, and you know, I mentioned we talked about the receiver thing, and I'm gonna leave you because it sounds like you're signing off. I'm going to leave you with this stat as people are scratching their head about why they might want a wide receiver. Well, over Kingsbury's two seasons as a head coach, the Cardinals have used 548 plays with at least four receivers on the field at the same time. That's 387 more plays than the next highest team. In fact, if you add up the total number of plays by teams that rank second through five in that span, it's still 11 plays short of the Cardinals total. So, that's why the Cardinals maybe value a receiver more than people think they should.
Yeah. Dropping knowledge like that. That's great. I appreciate you coming on as always. Thanks, Ed, for the time. Good luck tonight.
Thanks, Brad. Enjoy the draft.
There is Ed Werder, always getting it done with ESPN, and you can watch him tonight. Okay. Eric Metz is going to be on the other side, and Eric's got draft day stories. Okay. So, here's the thing around the draft. We can sit here and do mocks and all that stuff, and that's been done over and over and over. I want stories. If you're an agent and you're representing players on draft day, what are some of the crazy things that have happened? And Eric Metz is going to pull the curtain back. Valley resident NFL agent. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat at Greyhawk Golf Club. We're coming up here in a bit. It'll be the NCAA Division I Golf Championship press conference. Really good story, big story. The golf championships for the men's and women's are here in May here at Greyhawk. Stay with us. All right, so we've seen the mock drafts. They're out there. They're everywhere. And as today progresses towards tonight, everybody's going to be throwing this around and that around. What I like to do on NFL draft day, because we've had all the experts on, we've had all these guys on, everybody's done their thing, is just tell stories. So Eric Metz, we've had Metz on before through the years, and Eric has been in the NFL business. I don't want to go to the 40 number mark because you're not quite there yet. You know, let's just leave it at where are we at now? 30-something. Yeah, 30-something years. All right. How many NFL drafts for you, Mr. Metz, have you been a part of? Estimated.
34.
Okay. 34 NFL drafts. Now, I want stories, and if they get PG-13, I'm good. If they get R, I'm okay. Can't go any further than that. So let's just start out with, if you're going to rank goofy, you won't believe the stuff that goes on draft night stories. Give me some.
I'd say in the 1999 draft with John Tate, obviously a local guy.
Yep.
Played at Brigham Young University and had a wonderful career in the NFL. He was the top-rated tackle in that draft. And the Cardinals were struggling at the time protecting Jake Plummer, but they also needed some more weapons. So we thought that John had a good chance of going at number 8 to the Cardinals. So myself and my partners were over at the Tate household over in Tempe. And Mesa, my fault. And we were sitting around waiting for the phone to ring, and Michael Bidwell called, and we were very excited when the call when the Cardinals called, because the whole family could see him play each week. And he said, "We're pretty confident that we're going to draft John." John was excited. His family was excited. And he said, "But my dad is on the other line. They're on the other line with David Boston." We said we'd agree to terms, anything we could do. We really wanted John to be home. He kept us on the phone for about 2 minutes. And then he said, "I'm sorry, my dad wants to go with the receiver instead so we can sell more tickets." And of course, I got very upset and said some non-PG things. When we hung up the phone, I apologized to his family for using such words.
Yes.
And his mother responded that, "I'm glad you said it first, or I would have said it afterwards." Shortly after, the Kansas City Chiefs called, and they were talking about taking him at 14, but Tampa Bay had the 15th pick. So their general manager was saying, "Tell Kansas City you won't play there, this, that, and the next thing, so we could take John. We really want him." Kansas City gave myself and my partner some parameters that we had to agree to this or they wouldn't draft him. We said no to those parameters. Excuse me. We said no to those parameters, and we hung up the phone, and they drafted him anyways. They drafted John anyways, and that started a bizarre relationship with the Chiefs. And then Tampa right after that picked Booger McFarland from LSU, who, you know, was a good player for them as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right. I'll throw a name at you, Jamarcus Russell. Anything around Jamarcus Russell and NFL draft night or the leading up to?
A few days prior to that, my partner Ethan Locke received a call from the Raiders, and they had some parameters that they wanted Jamarcus to agree to a certain number that was not a market number in order to get drafted number one overall. Cleveland had the third pick, and their general manager, Phil Savage, was from Mobile, Alabama, and had coached Jamarcus in his camp since he was like 12 years old. He said, "Tell the Raiders no, and we're going to take him at number three." Ethan relayed that to the Raiders and said, "Go ahead and pass on him. We'll go to Cleveland." They sent Willie Brown and their offensive coordinator, Greg Knapp, to New York, to our Rome, to talk to us. Jamarcus was fine with going to Cleveland because he was comfortable with Phil Savage.
Yeah.
The Raiders said, "We apologize. We're going to take him anyways." The Raiders ended up with Jamarcus and a long holdout because for a variety of reasons. And the poor Cleveland Browns were stuck with Hall of Fame tackle Joe Thomas. So that one was a little bizarre. And once we had agreed to everything, I think I went to his uncle. Always wanted to go to a Boston Red Sox Yankees game. So the night before they were playing, so his nephew Jamarcus and Adrian Peterson went out to dinner, so to speak, while we went to the baseball game.
Oh,
when we got back from the baseball game, we could not find Jamarcus or Adrian Peterson, and we were a little nervous the next morning in the lobby because they still weren't back. So we were waiting in the lobby, and these guys get out of a car, come walking in and say, "Hey, we got to go up and put on our suits. Then we'll go over and get drafted." So that was a little stressful in New York for that draft.
Okay. So back in this story with the Raiders, were you talking directly with Al Davis at the time? Did he get involved in this one?
He had the people that handled all that doing with him. We talked to Al directly when they were releasing him. We were in his office, and that's a story for another day. But Al was very good, and we really always really liked Al Davis and the organization. They were good people. But it was difficult to get that one done for, a number of reasons. But in the long run, it didn't really work out for either side.
Eric Metz is with us. Well, it was like having Eric on. Valley resident, has been involved in the National Football League in drafts for over 30 years. Draft night is tonight. Okay, so what is today like for an agent? What are they doing today? Or is it, Brad, things have changed so much with the cap and all that. It's not what it used to be. Walk the fans through today.
Well, today, as opposed to the pre-rookie wage scale, it was much more stressful back then. Now you can do a rookie contract in 10 minutes. I mean, it's all slotted. It's very easily done. the contracts were very complicated pre-2011. So there was a lot of variables. Teams would try to call you and agree to certain things because there were so many different things that you could negotiate that you cannot negotiate anymore. But a lot of things that you're doing is you're feeling out if the team's going to be difficult as far as getting them signed, mm-hmm. if they're looking for certain parameters, or they're going to pass your guy up for someone else that will agree to those. And you also want to make sure you can reach the player if you're not in the same town as him. We had Joey Galloway from Ohio State, who we felt pretty strongly was going to go number 8 overall to the Seattle Seahawks. He said he did not want to go to New York. He just wanted to stay home and relax. So he was in Columbus, Ohio, playing basketball in a gym. And when we got to the 8th pick, his cell phone was not getting reception in this gym. So he continued to play. And then we explained to the Seahawks that he was playing basketball. And they're like, did he tear his Achilles? Is he injured? What are we going to do about this? So it was a very stressful time for a period for about 10 minutes trying to reach him and getting him on the phone to get drafted. So that one was a little nerve-wracking as well. When you're with the player, sometimes it's different. We had Charlie Fry from Akron, who had been MVP of the Senior Bowl, a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the Green Bay Packers, 3 days before the draft, I won't say the name to get him in trouble, but this person high up in the organization instructed me to fly to Willard, Ohio, and be sitting with him because they were going to draft him with the 20-something pick in the first round. So I flew to Ohio, and I went to his house, and that evening – we're sitting in his kitchen and this particular person calls and says, hey, I need to let you know something. It sounds like Aaron Rodgers is slipping and he won't slip all the way to us. But if he does, we're going to pass on your guy. And we're going to draft Aaron Rodgers. We're thinking, OK, so we had to tell him the truth. Here's exactly what the team said. Let's see how it shakes out. But we have a problem because if you don't go in to the end of the first, Cleveland doesn't have a pick, the other team that wants you, till the first pick in the third round. So we can be sitting here the entire second round, which is like Chinese water torture, you know.
Watching money just go not down.
Not the money as much as it's stressful. It's like sitting on the playground waiting to get picked.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the last kid getting picked for kickball. So it's the same kind of mentality that basically these people are telling you that you're not as good as you think you are type of deal. So, you know, apparently, you know, obviously it did work out that way. And Aaron Rodgers did slip all the way down to them. Maybe San Francisco should have taken him at number one. But Alex Smith was the consensus number one pick for them that year. So Aaron dropped all the way to the Packers. And Charlie ended up with such a not great organization in Cleveland. And the rest is history.
Eric Metz with us. Okay, so you don't have to name the player because I don't want you to go that far, but have you been in spaces on draft day and night where the family starts melting down because they thought, oh, we're going to get taken here early. And like you said, the Chinese water torture kicks in. Have you been in those uncomfortable spaces where you can't leave and things are happening that are out of your control, or are you in that space where a player may have been taken much earlier than anybody was thinking? And it's like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Either side of that one, Eric.
We had two players at the same position more than a number of times because it's not a position specific business.
Right.
And anyone that believes that the agent has some type of influence over this team is going to draft your one player instead of the other one. Or if we had two running backs, you know, that general manager who's, you know, 65 years old and has done this for 40 years is going to listen to an agent to determine the rest of his career. So we had two running backs in one draft. One went late in the first round and the other one was the first pick in the second round. And we happened to have ESPN at a party that we were having then years ago. And when the one running back got drafted, everyone was elated and jumping around and we were with him. And on the other side of the room, the other running back was basically in tears because he hadn't been drafted.
Yeah.
So you're kind of caught in the middle of those types of things. And it's happened a few times. And there's, you know, these guys are all competitive. That's why they're the elite athletes on the planet. But those ones where guys are so-called dropping, that is dropping in the draft, which is a big myth created by the media, because people were saying the players are rising today. You know, and in the next few hours, But in reality, the media is just finding out what teams already know. You know, they're just catching up to speed. So there's kind of a myth there as far as rising and falling, especially when you get the draft day. They know who they like and, you know, which particular players they have in order that they would draft.
Welcome back here to Greyhawk. We are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, Desert Financial Credit Union. The Division I Golf Championships, if you're like, Brad, it's NFL Draft Day. Yes, I know. It's also Division I Golf Championships are going to be here at Greyhawk in 3 weeks. Today they have their media day. We thank Eric Metz, love those stories, and Ed Werder for being with us. There are some things I want to get to before we wrap it up here, and we're going to be doing a lot tonight, social and on the site at sports360az.com around the draft, as everybody is. We'll have some different unique ways of looking at the draft. Today I'm supposed to be celebrating the Suns making the playoffs for the first time in 11 years. There are some that feel as though we have been way too hard on the Suns, and I would say, no, we haven't been hard enough. But I am not one of these people that's just going to sit here and continue to hammer it. Because look, in the 90s, things were great. 2000, things were great. 2009, things were great. 2010, things started to slip. And so I feel really good for some people. You have to understand that in the business of sports, there are people that work around teams that stink, and they can't say they stink. They have to sit there with a smile on their face and say, all is well. And no, it's not. So when things finally turn, I feel good for those people. I feel good for people that you've never heard of that work with organizations that are lousy. And then they finally get things figured out and turned around. We need more of the sledgehammer mentality in our side of the street and say, this is unacceptable. You know, when I hear people say, hey, coach, congratulations on the victory, talk about, we're not supposed to congratulate. That's not happening. Okay. I will say it's good for the Suns to finally break through. I feel good for some people there and all the hard work. I feel really good for Al McCoy because he's had to call a lot of awful basketball for the last 11 years. So I hope it never goes back down this path. It could go pretty quick. You know, Chris Paul's deal, he could opt out August 1st. He could. So they're fun to watch. It's a great run, and they've done a terrific job. James Jones should be executive of the year, and Monty should be coach of the year. That's it. That's not hometown rah-rah sports guys. It's just a fact. It's a fact. Not that hard. All right. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. He has done yeoman's work today, the Iron Man. I want to thank everybody out here at Greyhawk Golf Club. They have been terrific. The Division I Golf Championship press conference is at 11:30. You'll see some of that content up at the website at sports360az.com. Have yourself a great day.